Hey guys, I just wanted to let you know that this podcast is presented by mybookie.ag and that if you use the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, that you will get a 50% deposit bonus on your first deposit. And given that you are a listener to this podcast, I would assume you're relatively knowledgeable about sports, and I would trust you to try your edge on the online sportsbook. You can lay down some money and get in on the action at one of the safest online sportsbooks in the world. It's the only one that I am currently using. You can wager on all sorts of different outcomes on mybookie.ag, soccer, football, any major league, esports. You can even create your own player props, which is useful for me because if you know anything about me, I do enjoy a good player prop. So if you deposit using the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, you get a 50% bonus when you deposit. And I will add this for listeners of the TakeCast. If you deposit using the promo code MATTEK and you send proof of it to me on Twitter, I will follow you on Twitter and you can have access to me via DMs whenever you want. That's the TakeCast bonus that I'm adding in association with the mybookie.ag deposit bonus. Now let's get back to the show. Hello everyone and welcome to the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. This week's episode was recorded with Denny Carter at CDCarter13 on Twitter. We have what I think can only be described as a very interesting conversation about fantasy football, about J.J. Zacharyson, about Western life, politics, the internet, technology, the digital nightmare that all of us live. I really hope you guys enjoy it. If you don't, of course, you know where to find me on Twitter for all of your complaints, and leave a rating and review on iTunes, of course, if you do like the show. And after this quick advertisement, we'll get right into it. Daily Roto is a mostly proud sponsor of the TakeCast, a mostly sports podcast. TakeCast listeners can save 10% at Daily Roto with the promo code JANIS, J-A-N-I-S. If you are playing on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto will help you improve your daily fantasy results this fall and save time in the process with lineup optimizers, ownership projections, fantasy projections, premium content, and much more. They have all the good stuff that you want to help you make money at sports betting and daily fantasy. Their new lineup optimizer will let you build optimal GPP teams with stacks based on their projections faster than I can punt money off betting on Peter Uihlein. Sure, you can play the guys that I recommend each week, but shouldn't you also get advice from a proven daily fantasy winner like Drew Dinkmeyer? Yes, I do have better hair than Drew, but I also have his cell phone number, and that makes me a winner almost as much as it makes him a winner of the DraftKings Millionaire Maker. And it's not just fantasy. They have tools to bet on player props, golf matchups, and a customizable NFL game simulator for this fall. Head over to dailyrodeo.com/premium and save 10% with promo code JANIS today. All right, everyone. I would like to welcome Denny Carter to the show. We're gonna own some libs together, my friend. How are you?
I'm well, and you know I'm always up for owning the libs. It's my entire online existence over the past few months, so it's been fun.
Yeah. Before we get into it, I want to give you a little bit of a chance to talk about Draft Day Consultants and some of your other work online.
Sure. Thank you, Davis. Well, Davis is a veteran, a former consultant for Draft Day.
This is true.
Yeah. Back in the old days, before all of our original team at Draft Day Consultants all went on to do much bigger and better things, which I'm totally fine with. But when I look back at the lineup we had back then, it's pretty
good.
Pretty great.
Pretty good.
I have to say our current lineup is also great, but the lineup of 2014, 2015 was amazing. So anyways, draftdayconsultants.com. We offer various pre-draft and in-draft services for those interested. So check it out.
So now for basically the exact opposite of this, trigger warning for any snowflakes out there. Denny and I are going to talk about some very real things about the about American life, about living in the Western world. We're going to talk about politics. We're going to talk about
political intersection in football. So if you really don't want to listen to that, if that's really horrible for you, I would just suggest turning the podcast off right now. And the place we are going to start with is, how did football enter this realm of the world? How did football take on this massive importance where it's related to the military and the anthem and political protests? How did it take its space over baseball? Because baseball is white guys. White guys play baseball. White guys like baseball. White guys watch baseball.
Yeah, but I think that's sort of hitting it on the head. I mean, I think it's two pieces to this terrible puzzle. One is that fans are not directing their ire at a sport dominated by white players, but rather the NFL, which is dominated by black players. Also, our president holds a long-term grudge against the NFL, and what better way to get back at the league than to do it from the bully pulpit of the presidency? And so I was talking to my dad the other day, and he's kind of on the bandwagon of like, I'm done with the NFL. And I was like, dang, Dad, Trump is the only guy in the world who can make old crusty white guys hate the NFL. But it's happened.
It has happened. And I guess even further back than that, you would have a much better idea than I would. How did football go from being the second class sport to being easily, not even close, the most revenue generating, the most paid attention to league in the United States?
I mean, is the answer fantasy football?
I think the answer is clearly fantasy football, because it's so much better than any other distraction that exists.
Yes, yes. It's also, I know obviously fantasy baseball isn't exactly unpopular, but the grind, the daily grind of fantasy baseball is such a turnoff and such a hurdle for most people. And whereas, football being the once per week situation really is much more accessible. So yeah, I think I think the league has a ton to credit fantasy football for, including the popularity of the Red Zone channel, which, if you remember, started as them saying, if you're a real fan, tune into Red Zone.
Yeah, and you can watch every game.
And check out, if you're a real fan of the NFL, of the sport, you check out Red Zone and see all of your team's scoring plays. No, that's not. If you're a fan, you're watching every single play of your team, and you're watching the commercials too. And you're not watching, you're not obsessed with other games, you're not obsessed with the fantasy lineup. So they started pitching it, they started selling it as a thing for real fans, but it's not for real fans, it's for fantasy players.
Yeah, and I think actually it's more common now to be a fan of your fantasy team and of players than to be a fan of a team. I think like blatant tribalism in terms of fanhood is dying out a little bit, even as tribalism in other areas is increasing. But like I would say in my interactions with most of my friends in like real life, not on fantasy Twitter, a majority of them care more about what happens for their fantasy teams or their bets than they do their team winning or losing.
Oh yeah. No, I think that there is definitely an erosion of like hardcore fanhood as fantasy football has become more accessible and more popular. Just if you talk to people at like a party and football comes up, the first thing someone says is not about their team's running back, but about their fantasy team.
Yeah, everyone wants to talk to you about their fantasy team. In real life, everyone is the fantasy douche.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I admit it.
So I think you bring up the party is a really interesting idea, because I thought about this a lot. Football is the only world, really, where everyone has some sort of take. The super right wing, mega guys, they watch football every weekend. They have strong opinions about Tom Brady and Alex Collins and Colin Kaepernick. Like they have takes. And also so do all the nerds who campaigned for Obama and who got liberal arts degrees. Like I got a liberal arts degree. I love fantasy football. I'm as left as it gets. And I can't think of anything else in American society that is true about. football is, I think, the one intersection.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And I think that the potential for clashing politically is like because of that is there. It's ever present because it's such a ubiquitous sport that any gasoline thrown on the fire creates like this nonstop social media torrent of you know, fighting about what's going on in the NFL. And we see it all the time. I mean, the smallest things set these things off.
And it is interesting how that big debate over right and wrong, over racial tolerance, like literally it can come down to being like, you're a nerd if you wait too long on quarterbacks or whatever. Like, like that attitude really gets distilled down so narrowly. Even mm-hmm. even down into the nichest of niche in fantasy football, it's wild. And I like there is a much bigger sociological study to be done by someone making way more money and way more intelligent than I am about what that means and about like someday someone will do a sociological study on fantasy football that'll be like mind blowing.
Yeah, but I do think that overall if the president wasn't so obsessed with how he can use, you know, like the protests for his political advantage, and he does so in a really effective way. I mean, no matter what you think of it, it is effective in riling people up. If he wasn't doing that, we would not be talking about it in the same way that we do. It would still be a controversial. But it wouldn't be this apocalyptic situation that we see online every day.
So with that idea in mind, you know, the apocalypse that we log on Twitter every day, you know, every day the end of times is being predicted and it does get exhausting. And not even that I'm even saying it's illogical or irrational. Like there are a lot of signs that like things are horrible, the widening economic gap, like it's all quite bad. But In a much more selfish, smaller lens sense, do you actually see this being the beginning of the end for the NFL, or do you think that like 10 years from now, the racial inequality protest during the anthem will be like a historical footnote, but not something that had a lasting impact? Or do you think like, no, people really will stop watching on both sides, on the mega side of being like, well, I don't want to watch these black guys. And then on the liberal arts side being like, well, I can't support these racist owners.
Yeah. And by the way, I think that that's a huge missed story that, you know, if ratings are down for the NFL, it's probably not just people who hate the players.
Yeah, gotta hear both sides.
For protesting. I mean, it's also people who, you know, log on every day and see the horrible things happening by the league and in the league. And are sick of it. You know, I know people who have stopped playing fantasy football because they just can't pretend anymore that the league is anything but bad. So so that's a missed story. And I'm sorry, Davis, I forgot the question. What was the question?
Well, just the idea that this will actually have a negative impact on the NFL 10, 20 years from now. Yeah. Like, it's hard to say because there's so much revenue now.
Right. I really don't think that I don't think that we've seen this issue come to a head, actually. I think that that's still somewhere in the future, whether it's this season or next season. I think that the antagonizing from the White House is going to push players to a breaking point. And when that comes to a head, I don't really know how that will look. If we're talking about teams or players refusing to play, teams violating their own team rules about you know when and where they can express their free speech rights. You know, I don't know how it'll end, but I don't think we've seen the end of it. I don't think over the long term it'll be an issue because because there are term limits.
I think this is like probably an unpopular opinion, but I think like the violence and the concussion stuff, I actually think long-term that'll have like a larger detriment on the sport than this political stuff will.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's hard to quantify. Maybe it is quantified somewhere, but I would say that the health issues will force the league and the sport to evolve to something that doesn't kill the people who play it. You know?
Yeah, and the limiting the talent pool for football would be pretty brutal, because the game, like, just because it's a very complex game, it requires a lot of people being like elite, top 0.01% at what they do. And football, when not played well, bad football is like unwatchable.
Yeah, and how much bad football do we see? It feels like every season, it feels like we're talking about which team should be contracted, right? Can we get rid of four teams and like funnel those players into other teams? It's a lot of bad football that we watch every year.
So a little bit more lighthearted. How much do you think you've tarnished JJ's brand? How much is the LRQB brand tarnished for being associated with your Twitter profile?
Davis, I am just happy that JJ talks to me, much less has
co-host a podcast with you.
Much less host a podcast. I honestly sometimes can't believe that he still associates with me because I'm toxic. I mean, I understand in the scrubbed, polished fantasy sports world, I am totally toxic, and JJ is not. And
he's like the least ruffle feather guys in the world.
And good for him. And you know, good for him. He's created.
Yeah, everyone loves JJ because he's a great guy, and he doesn't tilt anybody.
No, right. And he's, but he's also true to himself, and he's honest, and everything. So I was thinking about this question before the show, and I'm just glad to be able to do Living the Stream with JJ for however long we do it, so that one Sunday afternoon when my kids are grown, I can point to the TV and be like, "See that guy? I used to do a podcast.
We used to do a podcast together.
You don't believe me, do you? I'm gonna go look up. I'm gonna play the audio from that old podcast we used to do, because they won't believe me. They will be like, "This guy, look at him. He's the biggest guy on fantasy. I mean, obviously, JJ's the future of fantasy. It's just I'm happy to be on board.
Absolutely. So tell me about your daily Twitter experience. How delirious are your ads? Like, I assume most of it is people telling you they're unfollowing you.
I do still get that.
Is amazing that they've held out this long.
Yeah, what took so long, right? But that really fizzled out probably like 2 years ago, when I just decided to stop pretending that it was like a football only account. And it felt good. It felt good. I have purged, I'm guessing here, I don't have the stats, but I have purged many, many thousands of followers over the years. During the season, after the season, whenever. And that's fine. My mentions are actually quite pleasant, believe it or not, these days, because it's people who understand who I am online, and you know what I do with the Twitter account, which is basically anything I want to do. You know, there are no restrictions. I don't advertise it as a certain thing. It's whatever I feel like for that day. You know, if I want to talk about horror movies that day, I'm going to go ahead and do that. If I want to talk about class warfare, I'm going to do that. And if I want to talk about ADPs of running backs, I'll, you know, do that.
I think that's a very good attitude to have about Twitter. I'm not a big fan of the stick to Sprott's accounts per se.
Right.
That's just not ever been me, really.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I used to do that, and that's how I got a following in the first place, is I really did stick to sports, like, almost exclusively, and like, occasional, like, food takes, you know, like, you know, but they were very...
Oh, your food takes are so bad.
The terror. I get it. They're correct, but
they're not. They're so bad. The only good take you have is that seltzer water is good.
It is good. I actually have reached out to Seltzer, to Polar, the seltzer company.
Sure, to sponsor the podcast.
To sponsor. I was like, are you guys interested in this at all? I haven't heard back, but we'll see.
Polar, if you're listening, you can also sponsor this podcast if you want.
Polar, Polar sent me t-shirts, and I wear.
Well, that's pretty cool.
I sometimes wear the t-shirts to exercise. So there you go.
So you actually wrote a really good book. People probably don't know this, but the best book you wrote was in 2014. You wrote How to Think Like a Fantasy Football Winner. And it was good because it's not about like ADPs and like, you know, all of that stuff. It's about how to think.
Right.
And so I was kind of wondering, 4 years on, a different world we live in, fantasy football and daily fantasy is way different now. What updates would you make to that book? How different would that book be if you wrote it now?
I mean, I think that people are so much more savvy about the game today than they were 4 years ago. Just the amount of data, the amount of good analysis that's out there has increased. I mean, I don't want to misuse the word exponentially, but it's increased a lot.
Oh, it's definitely increased exponentially from 2014.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, that's kind of my instinct was to say that. And so you have a much savvier crowd overall. Now you still have, you know, people who are playing the game based on gut feelings, and they're pretending that they're an actual NFL general manager, you know, that sort of approach to the game. But that evolution in the way that people think or play the game would probably change the way I write that book if I were to do that, you know, today.
I'm of the belief that like most people in the Western world would, their lives would benefit by 150% at the minimum if they took 15 minutes a day to meditate and to practice some sort of Eastern thought, whether it be religion, philosophy, anything like that, because our whole society is based off of want. The basis element all the way to the top, and we value nothing but wanting and acquiring more.
Just pure consumption constantly, whether you're consuming content, buying things, you know, it's, you're right. And the, how weird people would feel if they sat in a room alone and meditated on not what's going on around them, not thinking about what's going to happen later that day or what has already happened, but being very present, that would be a very strange feeling for most people. I would say for all but a sliver of people. And I try to set aside some time, especially at night, to give myself 5 or 10 minutes to just do nothing, but sit and like not think. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Don't think.
Like, don't think. Don't think. Don't try and make a choice. Don't try and reason anything out. Just let your brain exist for a little bit without trying to solve something.
And it's so hard to do. I don't know about your experience with this, but I find it almost impossible to not think, to just, like you said, exist and observe. Being an observer rather than a doer and a thinker, you know.
I've been trying to once a day go and walk my dog and leave my phone inside. No podcast, no, like at least give my brain enough visual stimulus to like be like, oh, I need to turn here or whatever. But like trying to not actively be clicking on or engaging in content.
Yes. I find it hard because I think our brains have been altered, you know? I mean, I'm talking about like real alteration, like chemically, our brains are altered by this constant bombardment of information. I think turning that off is important for our sanity, really.
It is, but I don't know if at this point, if like the human brain has the ability to like turn off the desire and addiction to screens. I think actually it's much more likely that we evolve into like an indoor, like sedentary sort of species than anything else. Like I think like gyms are like honestly on their way to extinction.
You mean like the people in Wall-E?
Yes. Like I don't, that's just like, to me, that seems so utterly realistic and the direction that we are going in.
Sure. It used to be where it was just younger people who were sitting inside attached to screens 24 hours a day. But now it's everybody. Now it's your parents. Now it's your aunt and uncle. Now sometimes it's even your grandparents
They all have iPads. They all have Instagram, you know?
And so now it's a total takeover of all culture, where everywhere you go, people are looking at screens and consuming information. I think it's harmful. It's also impossible to avoid. It's the way we live now. Like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You're going to go live in the woods by yourself? That's the only way to escape it.
I think a lie I tell myself about data consumption and content consumption is that I in some way I'm trying to better myself, right? By doing something vaguely educational or related to football. And I would, just kind of by osmosis pick up a couple things that would help me professionally or make me more intelligent. But I kind of think that constant deluge is probably more deadening than anything else, and probably we'll learn 45 years from now, all that constant stimulus really limits our logic parts of our brain or the problem solving parts of our brain or something like that. Hey everyone, I wanted to take a minute to tell you about Apex Fantasy Leagues, the best place to play online season-long fantasy football for money. There is a skill-based format where you play two games per week, and there's industry-leading payouts where Apex actually adds money to the payout pool. They really ensure that the best fantasy players get the good return on their investment. Apex hosts 12-team PPR leagues that provide a variety of drafting options, live or email, snake draft or auction. You also have the flexibility to sign up for a league just hours before the draft. On top of that, Apex pretty often puts extra money from their profits into the prize pool to make sure that leagues get filled. Apex also offers dynasty leagues in a variety of formats. And finally, Apex is the place to play if you want to win big money in a format that mitigates randomness. Not only does Apex have the highest payouts in the whole industry on a percentage basis, but it also features both blind bidding, free agent acquisition budgets, so that all free agent acquisitions are fair, and two matchups per week, one versus a head-to-head opponent and the other versus the league average, so that you don't get screwed when your opponent has the most points and you have the second most points. You're still going to come out of that week with a win. You can compete every week without worrying about arbitrary strength of schedule. Give it a try. I promise you will love it. Go to apexfantasyleagues.com today and sign up. And now let's get back to the show.
No, I mean you're onto it there. I mean that's it. It short circuits parts of our brain. Anecdotally, I'm talking 4 or 5 years ago, I used to be able to go online and read a long profile for 20 minutes,
Do that, and not click on Twitter, and not check your email,
and just do that. And I find myself almost physically incapable of doing that today. I can do it for 3 minutes at a time, and then it's off to check 17 sites, and then I'm back for another 3 minute chunk, and then the physical aspect of it is frightening. It's frightening to sit down with a book. I'll sit down with a book, a real book, and I'll read a few pages, and I will feel this tug. I'll feel a tug. What am I missing? There's got to be stuff happening. That FOMO feeling. And so I put the book down. I have to admit it. It's not good.
You gotta leave the phone out of arm's reach when you read a book. That's what I do. I am still, that's the one ability I've retained. If I sit down with a hard copy paperback book, mm-hmm. and my phone is if it's further away than my wingspan, I can sit and read for an hour or 2 hours. Yeah. I have the ability, but any other scenario than that, if it's in my pocket, if it's on my lap, can't do it.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll plug my phone in to charge and I'll forget about it, which is amazing that I don't reach for it. And then I'll go check and I have 14 texts from people being like, where are you? What's going on? And I'm like, Mom, relax.
It's okay. If you don't get a Email, it's fine. Like 24 hours probably is okay. But almost any other form of like instant message or Twitter DM, like if you, someone doesn't get back to you within like, I would guess like an hour, you're probably just like, well, I'm not going to hear back or something's wrong.
Yeah, that's because, I mean, if you're online all day, then if someone doesn't get back to you in an hour, you're afraid for their safety.
Yeah, you know? Definitely.
You're like, something must have happened, terribly happened to this person, and because who would be offline for an hour? You know.
So what's the solution? How do we get out of the content creation consumption? You know, no reasonable discourse, just like the deadening of the Western brain.
That's sounds like the name of my next album.
Yeah, I can't wait.
I think, I mean, what we were just saying, like forcibly removing oneself from the screen is the only way, right? I mean, it's the only way. Like you have to put your phone down. You have to close your laptop and put it away, maybe. Put it in a drawer or something. And so it requires a real effort, like a real physical effort to wean yourself, you know, off of these things. And also, by the way, I think that some people can do this much more easily than others.
Definitely. Some people are not as far gone as you and I are.
No.
Assuredly.
I talk to people in the fantasy industry all the time who say, yeah, I haven't been on Twitter since Friday and it's Tuesday, you know?
This podcast is for people who are very online. So like they are hearing, they're picking up what we're laying down, mm-hmm. but normal people are not probably, like 70% of people probably are okay just hanging.
Yeah. Yeah, or people who like are able to log off all Sunday during the NFL season. Do you do that?
Yes, sometimes, just because like the tilt is so bad for me on NFL Sundays. Like if I'm like having a losing DFS week, like it's just like it's much more mentally stable for me to just like come back to it Monday morning, because like sometimes it's just brutal. Like you're losing every game, you're getting no money back. Like you're just. It's just a bad place to be in. So sometimes on Sunday, I will just log off.
Yeah. Will you watch the games or no?
No. I don't even – like I do watch Red Zone noon to 4 every time. But if things are going poorly, that's it for me. I'm out after the noon games. Like I'm just like I can't – I'm not going to sit and watch Sunday Night Football when I just lost a month's rent because Johnny Manziel got benched, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. I mean, I'm glad that you kind of have that check on your mental health, because I'm online on Sundays and it kills me.
I'm more addicted to the gaming, the DFS part, than I am to the football.
Yeah,
so right. That's probably a difference between me and like a lot of people who play fantasy football.
I find myself on Sunday nights during the season. I find my brain is so wired by the end of the night that I have to like basically sit alone in a room, like I was saying, for a long time sometimes, in order to unwind and to like come down from that constant on, you know, Twitter, check the game, check this, check that, check DraftKings, FanDuel, 15 redraft leagues and all that, you know. It's so much. I feel like that's like an experiment in like torturing oneself with information.
Yeah, that's horrible. And like if it's if the information's coming slowly, if like the internet's backed up or like your phone won't refresh, like it's just like you just want to die.
Yeah.
like trying to like get the score, like the Jags Bills game, because you have Leonard Fournette and you knew that the Jaguars were in the red zone, and like your phone won't load.
Yeah.
You're just like, I would rather die than wait 13 seconds to find out whether or not they scored.
That's right. Yeah.
It's interminable. Like 2 years ago, me and all of my friends from college had got Red Zone together, and we would all go watch at this one house. And so the Wi-Fi would get backed up because we'd all have our laptops out checking our DFS scores, redraft, and everything. And so sometimes there would be that wait, and no one would know what was happening in game X. And it was just like, I don't ever want to do it again.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that sounds horrendous. Also, I have, I cut the cord, so I'm reliant on internet for my TV.
Yeah. I mean, anyone who hasn't cut the cord at this point, what are you doing?
People my age are not quite into that, I think, at this point, but I don't regret it. But when the internet goes out, I can't watch, I can't do anything. So it's like, you know, doubly tilting.
Does the internet often go out?
No, we have good internets here in the suburbs of DC.
We have Google Fiber here in Kansas City. So yeah. My internet just never goes out.
Right. Wasn't Kansas town going to rename itself Google or something?
Something like that. There was something like that for them to come here or whatever.
Yeah, I remember reading that and be like, this is totally healthy, a totally healthy country.
I for one welcome our new corporate overlords. I mean, Amazon, Kansas City was like getting ready to sell itself to become like the Amazon hub.
Oh yeah, yeah. Are they still in the running?
I think they're out, but like we were ready to just like sell the soul of the whole city to become an Amazon hub.
Everybody is the county I live in, Montgomery County, Maryland, is currently begging Jeff Bezos to put that thing here.
Horrible, horrible. Jeff Bezos is like he's like the someone someday is gonna write a book about that guy that'll just like crush people's minds.
I've read about his like personal daily practices, and he sounds terrifying, honestly. Like
does he play a lot of racquetball?
I don't know, but if he does, I bet you he screams a lot during racquetball.
Yeah. Oh, is he like one of those guys, like a CEO energy guy?
Yeah, yes, that right. It's you know, like waking up at like 3 a.m. and like, you know, getting a whole day's work done before the sun rises, that sort of stuff, which is just a sign of total insanity in my opinion.
I mean, all these men who just like kind of figured out how to be super billionaires are convinced that they have like some secret to existence that no one else could have ever figured out, and genetic lottery and luck have nothing to do with their success in any way.
Yes, yes, I think you're onto something, and it is. I mean, I weep for the young people who want to emulate that, because it's not going to work for the vast majority of people. There's no you know, regimen that's going to make you a billionaire. It just doesn't work like that.
No, you have to get lucky.
And so you spend your whole life pursuing this, and then you run into frustration and depression. It's a like a path to ruin to want to be the next Jeff Bezos is what I'm saying.
It's like a step of ruin to want to be like the next guy who owns a McDonald's franchise.
Yeah,
like just that sort of upward mobility is like crushing right now. Like if I've made it up like 2 tax brackets since like getting out of college, and I feel radically accomplished compared to what everyone else who I graduated with has done, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not because I'm some amazing hard worker or anything. It's just, I took good, like I've just had a couple good opportunities.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not going to write a motivational book about what you need to do to get up a tax bracket, because it's not real. You just got to get lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a study done last year about upward mobility in the U.S. and it's harder to rise economically in the U.S. than it is in any other Western nation.
There's more downward pressure in the United States because the rich people have more political power here than anywhere else where there's voting.
Yes, that's exactly, and so the thought, you know, and this goes against the grain of like the dream, you know, of the dream that we're told about as soon as we enter school, you know.
Yeah, the dream is a lie. The capitalism is a lie. America doesn't even have real capitalism. It has fake capitalism designed to like really crush people who start with nothing.
Well, I mean, there's a huge socialist scheme for the rich.
But it's fake. It's like even fake socialism, though.
Right, right. But I mean, it's like, you know, socialism for the rich and like laissez-faire capitalism for basically everybody else. Mm-hmm. And And, you know, laissez-faire capitalism for most people is crushing, dehumanizing, alienating. It makes life, you know, pretty miserable. I think you see that. I mean, I saw today there was a poll done, 19% of Americans ages 18 to 29 identify themselves as capitalists, 19%, you know, so that's not shocking to me.
No.
But I think it would be shocking to an older person.
But I don't even think people just don't even think of things in those terms anymore. Like, I don't know. And I think that a lot of the modern economic education we get, it's like totally screwed because, or it's not representative of what happens in reality because the government has such a control on the money supply. The money that we have is totally worthless, and saving your money is like if you save your money in a bank, you're like the biggest loser in the world. Like you're just flushing money down the toilet.
It's yeah. And
buy Bitcoin. That's like my big life philosophy right now. It's just like buy Bitcoin or gold. One of the two things.
I can't get with cryptocurrency. I'm sorry.
You would, if you read more about the problem with Bitcoin though, is that it does have this big Venn diagram intersection of all these mega libertarians who I absolutely despise.
Yes.
They like it for the wrong reasons. No, not even for the wrong reasons. It's just inevitably people who are on the far right and the far left of the spectrum are going to have some things in common just because they're going away from what the middle is.
And because they hate the system, right?
Yeah. And I think that money, to me, money is actually the biggest problem with the Western world right now. It's like, it's the thing that's the worst managed. It's the thing that really separates the rich from the poor in and of itself is the how the actual money we use works.
Something about economics as a discipline. I learned this, I think a couple last year, I learned that in economics departments in colleges, say the thought that economics is linked to politics is sort of new. I'm blown away by this because
Keynesian economics is the thing that's like taught in schools and everyone, and that's just all about government spending.
Right, but I mean, how can economics not be attached to politics? I mean, economics is the most political thing I can think of,
and I agree.
For a discipline, you know, for experts to approach it from a standpoint of these two are not connected and economics stands by itself, like economic policy stands by itself, is so absurd. And so when books come out saying, by the way, politics and economics are inextricably linked, then there's this pushback. Oh, no, I don't think so. Like, this is not what we teach. And I'm blown away by this. And I hope that thinking, you know, goes away, vanishes. It's harmful.
It is. And I don't have the solution because I think the Bitcoin or the gold dystopia where money never inflates. We only have a deflationary currency and you only have access to what you have access to. And if you don't have access to it at that moment, you're just going to die. Like that dystopia is not for me. Whereas that dystopia would be for a lot of people who are super into Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the world in which more money just gets printed and people who don't have enough money to invest just get continually wrecked, and then their kids get wrecked, and then their grandkids get wrecked anymore because whatever money there is to pass down is worth one quarter of what it was 10 years ago. That also doesn't work. So I don't have the solution. I might even like the dystopia more though. If I'm going to be completely honest on this podcast, like the dystopia where like a lot of people just lose might seem more palatable to me.
Well, we live in that dystopia now.
Except in this dystopia, the wealth is not, let's see what the, because it's not earned. I guess it's not, maybe this is what I'm trying to say. For real capitalism, which I think has some merits to exist, there has to be choice in money supply. And right now, nowhere in the world is there choice in money supply. You just have to use the money that your government gives you. And that's shitty money.
Mm-hmm. And hence crypto, right?
Right. That's where it's born. And this is not just a cryptocurrency argument. This is more a societal problem that has existed for thousands of years. And if you read more into like how a lot of these societies, like how the kingdoms died and how Greece fell, a lot of it was just because they started printing too much money and then everyone lost all their money.
Well, that's, I mean, that's us.
Yeah.
That's like the most us thing ever.
Yeah, the empire is dying. The emperor wears no clothes.
Yeah, I think people should kind of come to terms with that. That A, we live in an empire, and that it's
not a particularly well ran one for like the last 45 years.
Yeah, and I like we. It's time to acknowledge we live in an empire, and by the way, it's faltering, and there's probably no way back. You know, like once you hit a downward trend with an empire, it's not, there's no stabilizing it. I think without like a catastrophic event that forces changes, which I don't, want to wish for that because I think that means a lot of people suffer. But
I actually think in 2024, whatever that event may be, I think the world is evolved past the point where a power of change means that hundreds of thousands of people have to die. I think when we see the next big change in world powers, like when the United States got it, or when China began to get it, or when Russia lost it, I kind of think we've evolved past the point of like bloodshed having to occur for that to happen.
Yeah, maybe it'll be you're saying cyber warfare instead of
I'm saying it's much more based in like money and technological infrastructure. Now, I think that stuff has way more power than just manpower does.
Right. Yeah, I mean the days of millions dying in a war are probably over. But
yeah, now it's just like hundreds of thousands of poor people, and that's it.
Right. I had a college professor who talked about how migration would lead to the end of civilization, and because countries would collapse under the pressure of migration caused by climate change. And I remember being like, this guy's crazy. This guy's nuts. And then you look today and everywhere, every developed country is buckling under the pressure of migration. And I'm not blaming the migrants, by the way. They're escaping hell. Okay. But
even more so, I would say the political infrastructure of the countries. Right. Are crumbling and have a very easy target that's always been used. If you go back hundreds, like go back to the, I'm sure the Mesopotamians were blaming whoever was moving in with them for like whatever was wrong with their society.
Yeah. What I mean by countries are buckling, the country's political infrastructures are buckling and opening up chasms through which radical parties enter and take power. And so you're talking about literal Nazi parties suddenly seeming pretty appealing in large parts of Europe as migration causes people to political systems to crumble. They can't operate. They cannot operate like they did 10, 20, 30 years ago.
I think that's a great place to end it. If you weren't depressed when you started this podcast, you probably are now.
I do love talking about this, and I appreciate you having me on.
Like five people were like, yeah, you got to have Denny on. I was like, I'm waiting for the right time. Because there are people that won't listen to the trigger warning and will listen to all of this, and they're going to be on big tilt at me, and they're going to leave one-star reviews, and they're going to be like, I thought this was a football podcast on this podcast, and it was a great podcast, but I know people are going to tweet snarky things and like...
Right.
People on Twitter are generally the worst.
Yeah, I mean that's my that's definitely my experience. Thank you for having me on.
Do you want to plug your fantasy football site as the empire crumbles?
Oh yeah, sure. So it's draftdayconsultants.com. I also write for lineups.com during the season. I write my kicker column, which everybody needs, obviously.
Everyone needs.
So look for that soonish.